Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hello, nurses and friends of nurses. Yakko Warner here, and you're listening to a podcast on the Geekcast Radio Network. Lucky you.
Hello and welcome to the Geekcast Radio Network interview of Rob Paulsen. We will be talking with Mr. Paulsen very shortly. And yes, this is being released Monday, November 23rd, 2010, which Kevin, my co-host here, is 29 years old.
I'm pretty sure it's Tuesday.
Okay, well, Tuesday. Whatever.
But that's all good. Yes, I am 29. Thanks.
November 23rd, 2010. It doesn't matter. That's the day.
Doesn't matter what day of the week it is. it's my birthday, and this is a sweet-ass birthday present.
Yes, it is. And it took me all of, I think, 6 months to get this. Actually, no, what it was an old, very, very old Tooncast co-host who hasn't been with us on Tooncast since episode 6. I think a pup named Scooby-Doo killed Dion. But I was talking to Dion the other day, the music man, a couple months ago, actually, and he asked me, you know, are you guys ever going to interview Rob Paulsen? And I said, actually, that's kind of funny you mention that, because I'm actually waiting to even try to find a way to contact him until it's close to Kevin's birthday, because that's what Kevin's birthday present is this year.
It's all good.
Yes.
I couldn't think of something better to do on my birthday than talk to Rob Paulsen.
Yes, exactly. So without any further ado, I think you're probably going to hear a couple of clips from Yakko. Maybe a song or something or whatever, and then we'll get into the interview after this.
And now, the nations of the world, brought to you by Yakko Warner.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still, Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and French Guiana, Barbados, and Guam. Norway and Sweden and Iceland and Finland and Germany now one piece. Switzerland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Turkey and Greece. Poland, Romania, Scotland, Albania, Ireland, Russia, Oman. Bulgaria, Saudi Arabia, Hungary, Cyprus, Iraq and Iran. There's Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, both Yemen, Kuwait and Bahrain. The Netherlands, Luxembourg, Belgium and Portugal, France, England, Denmark and Spain. India, Pakistan, Burma, Afghanistan, Thailand, Nepal, and Bhutan, Cambodia, Malaysia, then Bangladesh, Asia, and China, Korea, Japan, Mongolia, Laos, and Tibet, Indonesia, the Philippine Islands, Taiwan, Sri Lanka, New Guinea, Sumatra, New Zealand, and Borneo, and Vietnam, Tunisia, Morocco, Uganda, Angola, Zimbabwe, Djibouti, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, Swaziland, Gambia, Guinea, Algeria, Ghana, Burundi, Lesotho, and Malawi, Togo, the Spanish Sahara is gone. Niger, Nigeria, Chad, and Liberia, Egypt, Benin, and Gabon. Tanzania, Somalia, Kenya, and Mali, Sierra Leone, and Algier. Dahomey, Namibia, Senegal, Libya, Cameroon, Congo, Zaire, Ethiopia, Guinea-Bissau, Madagascar, Rwanda, Mayor, and Cayman. Hong Kong, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, Yugoslavia, Crete, Mauritania, then Transylvania, Monaco, Liechtenstein, Malta, and Palestine, Fiji, Australia, Sudan.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Blanchard, and I'm joined with my Tooncast co-host, Kevin Thompson. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mike.
Today is Kevin's birthday, November 23rd, 2010. How old are you?
Don't ask that question.
How old are you? Just say it.
29.
Yes. And I figured that I would try to find some really, really cool, awesome present this year for Kevin. And today we have the super awesome privilege to interview Rob Paulsen. Yes, that's right. Raphael, or should we say now Donatello, is on the line with us. Hello, Rob.
Hey guys, how you doing? Happy birthday, Kev.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This was like my ultimate get for his birthday this year, because he is a huge fan of yours, and I was like, okay, what can I do for him without actually spending any money?
Oh yeah, no, and yeah, and I can also vouch for the fact that the fee that I'm charging is fairly reasonable too. So nobody's getting spent. Well, that's great. I'm very flattered, Kevin, that that this would be a good birthday present for you. I guess there's just no accounting for some folks' taste, but I appreciate your kind remarks and the fact that you paid attention to. To some of my wacky stuff all these years.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yes, very much so. Very cool. So just to get started, this is the first time we've talked to you, and I know that you've done other interviews with other people, so can you kind of give us a quick summary of your upbringing and how you got into voice acting?
Yeah, in terms of my upbringing, I was raised by Badgers. Actually, that's not true. They were Wolverines, because I'm from the state of Michigan. But no, I grew up born in Detroit and raised in and around Detroit on Flint, Michigan. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be a hockey player, but it became fairly clear that I had neither the talent nor the temperament to make any money at hockey, although I still loved to play. And then I sort of fell back on acting, which was my second passion. And I did this quite young. I was a huge fan of Peter Sellers and the Pythons and the Goons and all sorts of international comedy, primarily British comedy. And so when I was a kid, I sort of stole a bunch of things from those guys. And at the same time, I was a big rock and roll fan. And my earliest performing background consists primarily of singing. And that was my initial passion in terms of performing. So I had a huge background in classical music, learned to read music, and then realized that, you know, even if you're a lousy, a crappy, shitty band, you can still get chicks if your jeans are tight enough and you even have a modicum of talent. And so that didn't take me long to figure that out when I was in about eighth or ninth grade. And I did have, I suppose, less than a modicum of talent, but my jeans were pretty tight. And so I joined a couple of rock and roll bands and got involved in theater. And then out of high school, I went to college for about a year and realized that I was wasting my parents' money and my time and decided to join a theater company. All the time, of course, working on my voice and dialects and odds and ends, not necessarily with an eye toward being a voice actor per se, but just being an actor slash entertainer, because it really truly is my passion. When I came to Los Angeles in 1978, which is, my God, before Kevin was born. I at that time, I was primarily an on-camera talent, doing a lot of commercials, TV, episodic television, the occasional movie. And then my agent, by whom I'm still represented, I'm proud to say, suggested, you know, I was doing a lot of voice work, and they said, have you ever thought about doing cartoons? And I said, well, absolutely. I have, but at that time, you remember, maybe you don't, but in those days, cartoons were only on Saturday morning on the three major networks. There was no Fox, there were no cable, there was no satellite.
Yeah.
And, of course, they were in syndication in the afternoon on everybody's local stations, and everybody, you know, I'm in Detroit or Flint, everybody had a Sir Graves Gasly or a guy who would pop out of a casket and host the scary movies, or maybe some goofy guy who would have a talking puppet and he would host Rocky and Bullwinkle. You know, every local network had those guys. So I finally got a crack to read a couple of audition for a couple of cartoons, and Gordon Hunt, who is now probably better known as Helen Hunt's father, was at the time the main guy at Hanna-Barbera, and they're no longer around, but Gordon directed Smurfs and Johnny Quest and all these cartoons that I read for and ultimately got a couple of jobs on. And one thing led to another, and I booked Ninja Turtles, and it didn't take long before I thought, wow, I've actually got work that pays me money and residuals, and I'm going to have to make a decision here, and I'm probably much better looking as a cartoon than I am an on-camera talent, and the world, especially Los Angeles, is full of average-looking white guys with SAG cards, and so the rest is, as they say, history, and thank goodness I took my wife's advice and started auditioning for cartoons, and I haven't really done much on camera in the last 15 or 20 years, but I've been fortunate to be very busy with my voice, and that brings us to today.
Yes. What were some of your favorite cartoons and animated movies growing up, besides the ones you kind of just mentioned as far as at Hanna-Barbera?
Well, I wasn't a huge Hanna-Barbera fan. I was a fan of the actors, Dawes Butler and Mel Blanc and Gene Vanderpyle, so many people, Lenny Weinrib, Michael Bell, all these people that, you know, Jack Angel that worked on the shows, Don Messick, of course, all of these phenomenally gifted people, June Foray. But my favorite shows, I mean, I liked Huckleberry Hound and Quick Draw McGraw and El Cabong and, you know, all those guys. But when I was a kid, I really loved all the Jay Ward stuff. Tom Slick, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Super Chicken. I really loved Fractured Fairy Tales, Flickers, all the stuff with Hans Conrad and June Foray and Dawes, not only Mel Blanc, but Bill Scott, Paul Frees, Paul Winchell. Those guys were all my heroes. Same with, oh my goodness, forgive me if I don't remember the names, I'm getting old myself. Edward Everett Horton, spectacular talents all. So that's what I, you know, the Warner Brothers stuff, I was really a huge fan of all the Warner Brothers things, which made it so wonderful for me in the 90s when I was working on Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and Hysteria and Tasmania. I really loved all of Mel's stuff, virtually everything that came down the pike in terms of Warner Brothers animation, I could not get enough of. So a huge fan of all that.
Mm. In the decades that you've been working, you know, as a voice actor in the different animation studios and stuff like that, have there been a few of the studios that have kind of become your favorites, or, you know, some of the ones that you like working for the most?
Yeah, I think I certainly have a soft spot for Warner Brothers because they really changed my life. Well, I should say they changed it again. Ninja Turtles was a huge turning point in my career, and then when I booked Animaniacs and subsequently Pinky and the Brain and everything, that was about a 10-year gig. I started working for them doing Tiny Toons in the late 80s, and then we did Tasmania, and then after that it was Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and Hysteria and Freakazoid, all those things. So I definitely have a spot for Warner Brothers, but I would say over and above the studio, it's because of the people that I was able to work with there. I had the good fortune of making, you know, friends who are dear friends of mine to this day, Tom Ruger, Gene McCurdy, Andrea Romano, Peter Hastings, John McCann, Paul Rugg, Nick Hollander, Randy Rogel, all these incredibly gifted people, Rusty, gosh, I can't remember Rusty's last name. Forgive me, Rusty, if you ever hear this. I'm sorry, Rusty Mills, Keith Baxter. Just worked with Keith last week on a Warner Brothers song in which he wrote, in which I had to sing in French. The studio has a special spot for me because it really was just a home away from home for myself and my son. My son would come with me to a lot of recording sessions, and so all the people I mentioned became personal friends of all my family. Yeah. And, you know, I won an Emmy for Pinky and the Brain and was nominated for a bunch of other ones, and I won a bunch of Annie Awards for that show and for Animaniacs.
Right.
So I definitely have a huge soft spot for Warner Brothers. And in the last few years, I'd always worked for Disney too, but in the last few years, Disney has become a home away from home because I've been working a lot for them doing all the Tinkerbell movies, which have turned out to be really great and have done quite well. And, of course, Nickelodeon has kind of supplanted Warner Brothers as my almost daily home away from home because of Jimmy Neutron and Back at the Barnyard and Danny Phantom and Fairly Odd Parents and now Planet Sheen, a spinoff of Jimmy Neutron and Tough Puppy. So I've been really fortunate to work with people, and quite often people go from studio to studio. So it's really about the people, you know, Butch Hartman and Allison Dexter and Mark Taylor, all these lovely people that I get to work with at Nickelodeon are just really, really wonderful people who ultimately become personal friends, and that's just one of the really, really fantastic side benefits of being a voice actor. I get to work with these people that ultimately become my golf partners and my dinner partners, and it's just a huge gift.
Yeah. If you could still be working on any one show that you thought would have worked in that you've worked on in the past, which show would it be? If you could still work on Animaniacs, would you still want to work on that today?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Andrea Romano and I were working on, I was working with her on Avatar over at Nickelodeon last week, and we both kind of at the same time said, God, I really miss Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs, because they were probably the best work we've ever done collectively. You know, we got to do wonderful music with Richard Stone and Julie and Steve Bernstein. The scripts were wonderful. Mm. It stood the test of time. Every day I get fan mail from somebody who loves either of those shows. So I would have to say, if I could pick one, I would probably have to pick Animaniacs.
Yeah.
For the reasons I just, you know, enumerated. And now I get people who have children who really love Animaniacs as much as these kids did when they were in high school and college. So that would probably be my favorite, and it's difficult because it's kind of like, which child do you like the most? It's sort of a Sophie's Choice situation, because all of the shows not only pay my mortgage, but they give me so much pleasure, and I have so many good memories from many, many episodes of many different shows, and of course the friendships I've developed along the way, and it's just it's a huge, huge gift to be able to do that for a living. But Animaniacs was a pretty thrilling place to work on, and a show on which to work for, gosh, 7 or 8 years.
Right. Kind of getting into some of the characters a little bit. Has there ever been a role on any show that you've taken that, in retrospect, you not necessarily regretted, but you kind of wish you wouldn't have taken? We've talked to a couple other voice actors, and they've had like one or two roles that maybe they thought, well, I wouldn't have done that if I could do it again. Has there ever been one of those for you?
Yeah, I suppose if there has been, you know, the truth is, and I'd like to think that I'm driven by my desire to be artistic and provide the public and my fans with, you know, art and good choices and all that, but the bottom line is I still got to make a living.
Right.
And it's pretty tough to turn down any work unless I find it gratuitously just gnarly and of a nature that I wouldn't want my children or my grandchildren or my friends' children to see, or my parents. But that rarely is the case. However, there was one show I did a few years back at Warner Brothers called, maybe I've expunged it from my mind. it was called Coconut Fred's Fruit Salad Island. And it was clearly a desperate attempt by the producers to sort of capitalize on the SpongeBob phenomenon. And the backgrounds and the animation were really cool, very interesting. But my part in it was kind of goofy, and it was just silly, and the producers knew it, too, but they were in my same situation. They all had to make a living, and of course, I'm a professional, and irrespective of whether or not I think the show is kind of silly, I'm going to do the best job I can do.
Right.
And in retrospect, I suppose if I had to pick one where I would have said, you know, thanks, but no thanks, that would probably be it, but the truth is I didn't. I took the checks and cashed them, so I really have to be a bit of a hypocrite if I pushed that too much, but I think everybody knew that it was kind of a futile attempt to capitalize on somebody else's genius, and it didn't work. And so it was mercifully probably given the quick death it deserved.
Yeah. Kind of on the flip side, has there ever been a role that you turned down? Maybe you were too involved with something else, or you just didn't have the time. But a role that you ended up having to turn down that you wish you would have been able to play?
I don't think there's anyone I've ever turned down. I've had many I wish that I could do. I've had many, many issues where I've not been able to read for a project, because I was really busy. So it's the double-edged sword. You know, you can't complain when you're really busy, but it does take you out of the loop for a while if you're lucky enough to be busy.
Right.
I can't recall exactly what they might have been, but like... I can't really say that I had to turn them down because I was never offered the job and then had to say, sorry, I can't because I'm already working. I just didn't get a chance to read for them.
Okay.
But I would have loved, I'd have loved to have worked on The Simpsons. I would have loved to work on Family Guy. I would have loved to have done a couple of King of the Hills. I've done a few Penguins of Madagascar, but I'm not a regular, and I think that's a great show.
I just started watching that show.
Yeah, it's really good, and of course, all my buddies are on it. John DiMaggio, Jeff Bennett. I think Jeff Bennett is the most singularly gifted voice actor working today. He is so astonishingly versatile. Nothing phases him. He can ad lib. He can improvise. He's an incredible. What am I trying to say? He's an incredible mimic. He's just so talented, and he's really right now in his time.
Yeah.
He's kind of where I was a few years back. I'm still really busy, and not, luckily, folks still think enough of me to continue to, you know, bring me in and work. And I've and luckily things are still banging on all eight cylinders. But Jeff is probably the most prolific, gifted guy going right now. He's just incredibly amazing, and I and he's just the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. He's like Welker or Billy West or Norris or Tom Kenny. Just the nicest people you'd ever want to meet, and with completely devoid of any pretense.
Yeah. Has there ever been a show that you were involved with that you were pretty excited about and you thought it was going to be something big that just didn't end up, you know, taking off? It didn't last very long.
Oh, totally. One was a show called Butt Ugly Martians. I did that show about 10 years ago. It was me and Charlie Schlatter and Kath Soucie and Scott Bullock, O.G. Banks, Robert Stack. When that was that was such a huge thrill. Robert Stack has since passed away. That was a big, big thrill for me in my career, working with a bona fide Hollywood superstar of his age, of the golden age of movies, and what a lovely gentleman he was. But yeah, that show was directed by Susan Blue, who directed Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And everybody thought, wow, this thing is going to be huge. And I remember even driving to work one day. I think it was actually on my way to work to Jimmy Neutron, and I heard the local KBC radio morning drive guys talking about, well, parents, hide your wallets, because here come the Butt Ugly Martians, you know, the newest thing, or, you know, with all the toy fair this year said this is going to be the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I thought, oh, great. I bought stock in the toy company, man. I thought, this is great. I'm going to be, just really catch this thing as it explodes. And it went nowhere. Nickelodeon bought the rights to it, I think, ostensibly to just put it on the shelves, and if it aired and it hit, fine. If it didn't, then they could keep it out of the way of the other. So it was a very cool strategic move by Nick, but the show absolutely tanked and did nothing. I mean, they took us to England. The investors were all from England. They flew us to England a couple of times. I did a bunch of work over there, a bunch of promo over there. You know, they feted us like we were big rock and roll stars. Nothing. Zip. So, yeah, it happened. You just never know. By the same token, I had no idea that Ninja Turtles was going to be what it was, and certainly no idea that I'd get a second crack at it 20 years later.
Right. Is that probably one of the flip side, one of those shows that you didn't necessarily think was going to be a success that turned out to be a big hit? Would that be the number one that you would name for that?
Yeah, certainly. That has to be the number one in my career that I had no idea would be a hit, not because I wasn't aware of it. I'm not a big comic book guy, but I was aware of the Ninja Turtles comic book. I just certainly had no idea that the show, I thought it would be okay and it might be kind of fun, even though the cartoon was significantly different than the comic. Yeah, pardon me, the comic book was different than the cartoon. The cartoon was much lighter and more kid-friendly and more designed to sell action figures, but I had no idea, none of us, Townsend, Cam, Barry, Pete, Renee, none of us, Pat Fraley, we had no idea that it was going to end up being the pop, huge piece of the pop culture that it ended up becoming.
So no stock for the Turtles toys then, huh?
I some of us did. I think Sue Blue bought a bunch of it and did pretty well on the Playmates stock.
But, nice.
We did a couple hundred episodes, so it was really good. And you know, it did a lot of great stuff for my career. I mean, being one of the Ninja Turtles is kind of like what Tom Kenny's going through with SpongeBob. I mean, when you have a show on which you're one of the hit characters, it opens up a lot of doors. And Tom Kenny is way, way more talented than just SpongeBob. But the fact that he's on the most, you know, that he is the voice of the most popular cartoon character probably in the last 10 years, he is, and he is incredibly versatile. He gets a chance to show producers what he's capable of, that, you know, doors are open for him, as they should be, that may not be open if he wasn't doing SpongeBob. So there are a lot of ancillary, wonderful things that happen as a result of being on a hit show.
Right.
And the same thing happened with Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs, although those weren't as much of a surprise because right out of the shoot, we knew we had something special just because Steven Spielberg was running the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Out of all the characters you have played, what are some of your favorites?
Well, certainly Raphael, Pinky, Yakko. I really like Carl from Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius. I think Carl is a very interesting, cool character because he works beautifully with the drawing or the rendering. He really does. His sensibilities, his personality, his insecurities, his oddness really work with the drawings, and that's a huge testament to the folks at DNA Productions because the kids that do the draw or computer generate Carl do a magnificent job of it. And now on the subsequent show, the spin-off called Planet Sheen, the soul of Carl has sort of been mutated into an oddball alien critter called Doppy, which is short for doppelganger. And they do the same magical computer work there vis-a-vis Carl. And so I would say that one, that's another one. And a lot of women, a lot of girls really love Carl because he's so cute and and very vulnerable. And but he's odd, too, you know. He's not above getting a crush on his best friend's mom, which is a little spooky and a little, you know, it's probably a felony in some galaxies, but who gives a shit?
Exactly.
Carl and Pinky and Yakko, and although I had a great time on The Mask because I got to bounce all over the walls and got to be like Jim Carrey for a lot less money. But Yakko and Pinky, Dr. Scratch and Sniff, those that I really love too because Pinky and the Brain, I really truly enjoy that. Mostly because of Maurice LaMarche, who was one of those guys. If you talk to him, you just go, this guy is so stupid talented.
We did interview Mo, and wow. Yeah, Mo is awesome.
He's just fucking crazy with his talent, but he's just a great guy.
Yeah.
That's what makes him so much more, that's why I love him even that much more. He falls in the same category as Billy West and Jess and Jeff and Frank and Tress and Kat Soucy and Maria Bamford and Kara Strong and April Winchell. These just stupidly gifted humans with no pretense about their gifts. But having Mo to work with and create those two characters together was an incredible experience, and we are best buddies to this day.
I have a little side question. This isn't actually anything on the sheet, but I'm wondering, since we are talking to you, and I don't think we ever asked Mo this, did Pinky and Brain ever truly succeed in taking over the world?
Not that I know of. I don't believe they ever did, which is probably good because it opens the door for another series. And it's obviously sort of self-serving, but as a fan and as an animation aficionado, everything old is new again, and I would not think it was too far out of the realm of possibility that Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs could have a second life and still be viable. I mean, I would think they're every bit as viable as Turtles, which is now probably in its fourth iteration.
Right.
They're making a Smurfs movie. They did a Rocky and Bullwinkle movie.
They're doing another Thundercats now, so.
Thundercats, which Andrea is directing. I just got done a couple of, I just did another Scooby-Doo movie.
Right.
The fact that Animaniacs and Pinky the Brain have been gone for 10 years.
Time for them to come back.
I don't think it's impossible. So maybe it's a good thing that we never succeeded in taking over the world because I have to tell you, now mind you, I'm not a big celebrity where people come running up on the street, but once people find out who I am and what I've done, every one of them, to a person, loves Pink in the Brain and Animaniacs.
I've never met anyone that doesn't like them.
Never. Never, 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 never. And virtually everybody, while they may not recognize everything that I've... Because I mean, I play golf with people who are older and stuff, and they'll say, Pinky and the Brain, oh, yeah, we love that. So I get that a lot. Mm-hmm. And that would only indicate to me that if of the few thousand people a year that I hear from in terms of, being fans or that I meet and find out what I do and who I am, that would indicate that if that's just basically a sampling of the general public, that right. I get that kind of response from people all over the world. So I would
that
think,
would be awesome.
I mean, for God's sake, last week, Planet Sheen, I think it's in its first month of being released, and it was number 15 in all of cable television. Number 15.
Wow.
That's including, you know, the O'Reilly Factor and football and ESPN, and the only other cartoon was SpongeBob. So that indicates there are millions of people that just watched the new offering from Nickelodeon, let alone, you know, a generation and a half who have been exposed to Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs and now on video.
Right, yeah. What was it like having the chance to do characters like Dick Dastardly and Super Snooper and some of those older, some of those other Hanna-Barbera classics as their younger selves?
Oh, well, it was great fun because I was basically following the footsteps or the vocal steps of Paul Winchell and Dawes Butler, and you know, it wasn't really intimidating because it's not, I don't get so intimidated. I never got really scared of anybody in that way out here. I was very cognizant of who it was I was following, and I had enormous respect for what they brought to our culture and for their talent and their gifts. But it didn't scare me. I looked at it more as a great challenge, and it was my opportunity to shine so that I would be able to get more work. And I don't think of myself in the same terms of Dawes Butler and Mel Blanc and June Foray and Don Messick and those greats, Paul Frees and Jay Ward and Bill Scott, Hans Conried. I really don't. That's for other people, critics and fans, to make up their own minds when I'm dead and gone, or when I'm in my 60s or 70s or 80s, where these folks were when I came out here. But I'm certainly privileged to at least work amongst them and be counted, you know, as their peers. But I don't know that I would say that I consider myself in the same universe as those folks. But it never really freaked me out. It was a great challenge, and hopefully I rose to the occasion. But I'm never under the false assumption that I could replace any of those people, and that really is why I think I'm better at creating characters. And my strengths are generating sort of organic characters from nothing, with the help of the producers and the writers and the artists and my other fellow actors. And hopefully, I generate characters or have a hand in generating characters that become classic ones, you know, that were created by the actors we just talked about. So I don't go out and audition for Elmer Fudd and Bugs and Daffy and Tweety. Mm-hmm. And I could, but I would do a bad impression of somebody like Billy West or Maurice or Welker or Jeff Bennett or, you know, Darren Norris or John DiMaggio. I would do a bad impression of one of those actors doing a spot-on impression, Jeff Bergman, another guy. You know, Obviously these actors are dead. The actors who created it are dead, and the franchises are still viable, so you need people to do them. But all the people, you know, Joe Lasky, all the people who I was just talking about can do a far, far, far better job than I at those. So I really don't even audition for them. I'm much better at creating my own stuff.
Gotcha. When you were cast in the second Land Before Time movie, did you have any idea what you were getting yourself into there?
No, I mean, I knew that the first movie was a really big hit, and it was, my son was kind of into it. He wasn't really a big dinosaur kid. He was really into Sesame Street and Big Bird, which was great for me because I loved watching all that. And I was just grateful that we didn't have Teletubbies or Barney when he was around. I swear to Christ, I'd have put a gun in my mouth. But I didn't know from two different angles. I didn't realize what a lovely gig it would be in terms of the franchise longevity. And, you know, in terms of the back end of the deal, man, the residuals we made on those video sales were just ridiculous. It was great. I mean, I have a lot to, you know, I got a lot of dinosaurs to thank for the odd sports car I purchased throughout the year. So, it was a great thing. And, again, same thing, you guys. Really, 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 really lovely people. Linda Gary, who has since unfortunately passed away.
Mm.
I got to work with, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, God, the guy from Logan's Run and Romeo and Juliet, Peter... Oh, I'll think of it. Oh, I'm sorry, not Peter, Michael York did one of them. You know, I got to work with so many, and of course, Jeff Bennett and I did a couple of characters that recurred in those things. Tress McNeil was on those. We went through a couple of different kids that played Littlefoot, you know, young guys, that their voices would change, and they were all great kids. Andy McAfee played, you know, I forgot what character she played, but she was on all of them, and just, I got to see this really sweet little girl grow up to be this incredibly beautiful, stunning, talented young woman. And Kenny Mars, oh my God, Ken Mars, what a genius actor of whom I was a huge fan in all the Mel Brooks movies he did long before I came to Hollywood. And he and I share a deep passion for sports cars, and so I've gotten to, you know, be close friends with Kenny Mars, who's probably close to, I don't know, mid-70s now. But again, what a gentleman, just a big teddy bear of a guy, and incredible voice and lovely talent. And it was just, I mean, you go to work and it's almost almost embarrassed to take the check, almost, but not too embarrassed.
What's it like coming back to, you know, you kind of mentioned it already a little bit, but what's it like coming back to the Turtles franchise all these years later, and not just coming back, but voicing a different character this time?
I am so excited. There's a kind of a backstory that is really kind of interesting. I remember when I got the call to go read for it, you know, I told my agent, I knew that Nick had paid like $60 million or something for the rights to Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, that's cool. They're going to be around. And my son now works at Nickelodeon on Tough Puppy, Butch Hartman's new show. He's a production assistant. And so when he graduated from college, he went to work over there. And so I thought, wow, this is cool. Maybe my kid now can get a chance to work on Ninja Turtles. How cool would that be to have two Paulsons working on Turtles? My agent called me and said, hey, the producers want you to come and read for Ninja Turtles. And I said, well, it's not that I'm too proud to read. I'm happy to do it because I know from the several versions that have happened since the version I was on, sometimes they don't necessarily stick to what we did. They want to try things, and I got no problem with that. Hell, I don't own it. I'm just an actor.
Yeah.
And they said, and I said, now, did they realize that I was on the original show? And they said, she said, yeah, they know. And I said, well, because I just don't want to go in there and having them do a little research that they say, wow, this guy sounds pretty good. Because, you know, they're younger. They're probably in their late 20s, right, like you guys, early 20s. And so they may have been aware, they obviously were aware of the show, but they may not have known that I was on the original show. And maybe they might say, wow, this guy, Rob Paulson, is really good. And they do a little research or the IMDb and say, oh, no, he was the original Raphael. Sorry, we don't want them. So I didn't want to waste their time and my time, frankly, if that was going to be the case. And then she called back, and I said, and I also don't want to be a charity case. I don't want them to say, well, let's throw the old guy a bone and see if he can still do it.
Yeah.
Because I can, you know, but I also am cognizant of the fact that I'm old enough to be your dad, and while that doesn't bother me, aging is great. It beats the alternative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So... and I said, I just don't want to be uncomfortable for any of us. And they called back and said, no, we know exactly who you are. We know that you've won an Emmy. We know that you've done thousands of these. We're a fan. We want you to read this time for Donatello. We have a different idea about Donnie. And I said, wow, okay. And of course, the first thing I thought of was, well, you know, Barry Gordon is one of my dear friends, and he did Donatello when we did it. And I never would ever in a million years want to step on anybody's toes.
Right.
And they said, no, you know, with all due respect, you're the only one we're having come back, and it's nothing personal. We just like some of the other voices you've done, and we like some of the sensibilities for the direction of Donatello right now. He's not going to be quite as nerdy, and he's still going to be the gadget guy, but maybe a little more energy, not quite as nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, as long as I'm not, A, doing something that might be hurting one of my fellow actors... because I really, ethically, it's just, you just don't do that.
Right.
And
right.
And B, if you know that I've already been to that rodeo and you still want me to come down, shit, yeah, man, I'd love to read for it. And so I read, and you know, about a month or two went by, and you know, I sometimes these things take a while, and of course Nickelodeon is going to be pretty vigilant about it because they spent a lot of dough. And my kid one day called me up. He's got his own apartment, but he said, hey, man, they've had people in here, I mean, gobs and gobs and gobs of people for reading for Turtles. It's like crazy. And I said, well, hey, at least I got a crack at it. And one day I got a phone call saying, hey, guess what? You booked Donatello.
Nice.
And, yeah, that's what I said. How nice is that? And I was so excited. I mean, I've done a lot of stuff, and I've done a lot of cool stuff. But to be able to sort of, you know, have Ninja Turtles Redux at this stage of my career is a great deal of fun. And we've recorded the pilot. I hope that I'm still in the mix. I mean, you know, they're still mixing and matching and deciding what they're going to do. But it was such a big thrill and a huge thank you to the producers, because they could have gone many different ways. But the fact that they're aware that I was there at the beginning and they trust me as an actor to be able to bring something new to it. And, you know, they're probably going to get a little bit of flack from the super geek crowd that's going to say, oh, my God, you know, this is sacrilege. And my only response to that is, you know, look, folks, to coin our friend, you know, William Shatner, get a life. You know, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, and it's a free country, and people can say, I don't like turtles if Rob Paulson's not going to do Raphael, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I used to get the same crap when Animaniacs was coming along, and, you know, we had like a year and a half to get it on its feet after Tiny Toons. And I used to get email and read all these boards about, oh, my God, you know, I can't believe they're going to, yeah, how can we do better than Tiny Toons? I mean, what's Warner Brothers thinking? Why don't they do more episodes with Buster and Babs? I mean, you know, there are too many characters to exploit. They shouldn't deviate from this. And now it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that was that show that everybody did their homework on before Animaniacs knocked it out of the park. So you just, you know, these people are talented and they know what they're doing. And certainly I would never begrudge you your right to criticize. You can do it all day long. But Jesus Christ, you know, give folks a chance. Right. And I'm pretty good at my job. And I know what I'm doing. I've done this a long time. I've been down this road. The other actors, I'm not going to mention who they are because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of the producers and tell everything's in order. But trust me, these guys know what they're doing. Nickelodeon knows what they're doing. It's worth a crack. And if the show doesn't work, it won't be because the people who are putting it together don't have the best interests of the fans at heart, and they want to give them a good version of the turtles, and they still think that there's life in it. So, yeah. You know, before you get bent out of shape, that Rob Paulson is, you know, first of all, thank you that you put that you're that worried about it, that you make me feel like a big star. But trust me, it isn't that big a deal. It's about the show. It's not about whether or not Rob can, you know, make the transition to Rob or Donnie, or the voice is going to sound too similar. It's not about one actor. It's about the whole project. So give it a chance.
Before we move on to some behind the scenes stuff, are you able to give us a sampling of your version of Donatello?
Well, I was going to say, mind you, before I go on, let me say I was not directing that to you guys per se. I'm just saying that you know, that you and I know there are going to be certain folks that are going to, you know, have nothing better to do than spend way too much time on Facebook going, I've heard Rob Paulson, I'm a big fan, but how could he do this to us? You know, that's the kind of stuff you're going to get. You want to go, dude, really, seriously.
Yeah.
You know,
I actually posted that as soon as you had made that tweet. I kind of help run a site called BehindTheVoiceActors.com, and I actually posted that news immediately, and everything that I posted was positive. I was pretty excited. I don't, you know, to me it's just the fact that they're bringing you back into a show that you already were involved with. I think that's cool, regardless of who you're playing. You know, it's just kind of a cool little tidbit.
Well, I'm like, is this Kevin or Mike?
This is Kevin.
That's Kevin.
Okay, no, Kevin. I listen, man. I agree with you, and it's a huge thrill for me, you know, personally and professionally, because Ninja Turtles. I mean, still here we are, 20 odd years ago. And you guys are jazzed about it, and I would venture to say most people are. That's astonishing.
Yeah.
That's astonishing that it's still, and Nickelodeon thought enough of it to spend $60 million on it. They're not stupid, you know.
Right.
And from a personal standpoint, it's not only a huge thing, but you know, my kid, he's out of his mind. He's going, God, this is so cool. And you know, he's going to try to put a word in to see if maybe he can get hired on as it, because nothing would be more exciting than for me to be able to go to work on Turtles and know that my son is working on it too. That would be great.
Yeah.
And so I'm very, very, very excited about it. And if nothing else, maybe I'll become a Trivial Pursuit question and say, who's the only actor ever to have worked on Ninja Turtles doing two different characters? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know? So in terms of the way the voice sounds, right now it's pretty much kind of like this, and it probably wouldn't be a whole lot of different from Roth to the what am I trying to say? The context and the fact that it's probably a little higher and a little quicker. He's kind of got a crush thing for April. So it's kind of a little more, that's really like one of the most interesting things I've ever seen in my life. Are you serious, Mikey? You really think you want to do that? And so it'll be probably like that. But we've only done the pilot, so it's kind of hard to nail it down until we get all the ducks in a row. But when they get it figured out and they have all, you know, they give everybody the green light to talk about it and leak stuff about it, then you'll hear about it.
Cool. Are there any other characters besides Donatello that you have upcoming in shows or whatever that you're excited about that you can tell us about without getting in trouble?
Yeah, I would say that for folks who haven't watched it, give Planet Sheen a try. It's pretty funny and it's doing really well. And the character I'm playing in there is, as I said, called Doppy, and it's Carl with a different body. But Jeff Garcia, who plays Sheen, and Bob Joles plays a monkey who has crashed on this planet during the days when the U.S. used to send up monkeys. And of course, it's no surprise that his name is Nesmith, with an paying homage to Michael Nesmith of the Monkees. Mm-hmm. And he even wears a red stocking cap like Michael Nesmith did on the Monkees television show when I was a kid. It's pretty clever stuff. Soleil Moonfry is on it from Punky Brewster. She's fantastic. Candy Milo, one of the most gifted, sweetest, beautiful. God, I love Candy Milo. She's on it. She's freaking hysterical. Freddie Tatasciore, another guy who is just a walking teddy bear with entirely too much talent, plays the emperor of the planet Xenu. Very, very, very funny. Tom Lennon, who was a regular on Reno 911 and is one of the funniest freaking people you'll ever meet in your life. Great guy. Jeff Bennett, again, you know, he's on everything. Jeff Bennett is on every show that's anywhere, and as he should be, he makes everything he touches better. He's like the Peyton Manning of voiceover. You know, he's such a good fucking quarterback that he makes everybody play up to his level. Welker is the same way. They've all got that natural ability to make everybody around them perform better just by being in the show. And so with that cast, you know, you should definitely give that show a crack. Another new guy, I've done the show a few times. We mentioned the Penguins of Madagascar. Danny Jacobs, who plays King Julian, is unbelievably talented. I mean, it's unreal how good this guy is. Just stupid talent.
Julian is so funny.
Oh, my God. He's so funny. And I got to say, I mean, I know the guy in the movie was great, but Danny, to me, Danny just puts extra juice on it, man. And he is so, I get tongue-tied. I can't say enough about this guy. And again, really, 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 really nice guy. But stuff where you go, wow, where'd they find this guy? And thank God they did while I'm still alive to hear it. Talent. You know, it's just incredible. Billy West never ceases to amaze me. So, but yeah, Planet Sheen is the one that's the newest one that's going on right now.
Right. I've seen advertisements for it. I haven't had a chance to catch it yet, so I might have to DVR it or something.
Yeah, watch a couple episodes and see what you think. It's pretty funny. It's written and produced by Odekirk, Jim Hope, who was responsible for producing and writing a lot of the George Lopez shows. Very funny on it. I mean, his stuff is writing is excellent. Doppy gets to sing a lot, so that's kind of funny. My Carl / Doppy character sings, which turns out pretty funny. So I'm really proud of that. And so yeah, man, I'm still knocking around, and people are nice enough to hire me to do it. Used to get me in trouble in seventh grade, and thank God they do. I really appreciate it.
Every voice actor seems to have a method for remembering which of their voices goes with which of their characters, especially if they are on a show where they voice a good deal of characters, like you did on Tiny Toons, Teen Titans, and other shows. How do you keep all of your voices straight?
You know, it's really all about being in the show and the context, because I don't have to think about 100 different voices on each show. I mean, it's not really that hard. I wish I could say it was some magical technique that I use. It's like an ancient Chinese secret, you know, but it's not. I'm good at my job, and I should be. They pay me a lot of money to do this, and one could argue in this economy that I'm overpaid, but, you know, I'm a capitalist and free enterprise, and thank God that I live in a country that folks are, I'm able to make the kind of living I do, going to do what I would be doing for free. I mean, I play. And but really, it's about being a professional, and remember, there are people there to get you on point, and directors who have examples and say, yeah, it sounds a little off, listen to this, and go, oh, yeah, I remember. And if, especially if it's a show that's on which you're a regular and it's a hit, then, you know, you're doing it every week anyway. So it'd be kind of like if you were a plumber and there were rudimentary things, you know, there were jobs that you did on a regular basis, like, you know, putting in faucets and fixing toilets and tweaking septic tanks and how to fix a leak. I mean, there are things that you do by rote all the time.
Right.
And certainly everything's, once in a while, if something comes along where you got to totally repipe something and you got to really think about it and work at it and you're exhausted. But by and large, I'm a journeyman, and I've been an actor for many, many years, and I've done thousands of these things. And I don't have a laissez-faire attitude. I'm comfortable and confident in my work, and hopefully that is reflected in the quality of my work. And I feel that my job is to give the producer an embarrassment of riches. I feel like when I do a take, that if I do my job well, the producer has a problem deciding which take is the best one. And I would venture to say most actors feel the same way, because we want to be able to not only, you know, we're leaving our mark on it, it's going to go out there, and if the show's a hit, you know, it'll be around for years after I'm dead, and I want people to enjoy it, and I want other folks to be happy with it and proud of their work in collaboration with me. But I would like to think that I'm professional enough to be able to figure out how to do it and follow direction well and all of that. So it's not like a big stretch. It really is about being confident and trusting your instincts and trusting the people that are nice enough to hire you.
Gotcha. In all the recordings you've done, you know, the thousands and thousands of recordings, what do you remember any big practical jokes, or is there the funniest thing that has happened in the recording studio, or who's the biggest prankster to work with?
You know, I don't really, no real physical prank. There was one that was really good. It wasn't really a prank. It was, I have to say that at the risk of sounding a little arrogant, I certainly rank amongst the
I thought so.
The highest level of at least vocal pranksters. I do it all the time because I like to take the piss out of people because they know I love them, and I have never run into an issue where I've offended anybody because I pretty much know my audience and these guys, and I get the piss taken out of me, and I love it. But I remember years ago we were doing a show, a kind of obscure show, and a really fascinating cast, and it was a fascinating show called Phantom 2040, and it starred Jeff Bent, Scott Valentine, Margot Kidder, Paul Williams, the brilliant songwriter, Mark Hamill, very eclectic cast, and I did maybe seven or eight of them, so I did enough to be, friends with everybody. And Mark is another guy that I just adore. I spoke to his wife the other day on the phone, and I just love Mark Hamill. He's just one of the nicest superstar people you'll ever meet. I mean, the guy's freaking Luke Skywalker, and he might as well be your next-door neighbor from whom you're borrowing a cup of sugar. He and his wife and his children are just lovely, lovely people. But I remember we were doing an episode of Phantom 2040, and this was, 10, 15 years ago, I guess, and Paul Williams was late to the recording session. And I remember he came in like 45 minutes late, and, you know, that happens sometimes, and we were all just kind of taking the piss out of him. And he came in, he was very gracious, and he said, and as a little backstory, you may or may not know that Paul had several bouts with substance abuse, which is no big surprise, and he's been, you know, he now, amongst one of the many incredible talents he has, he's very involved in helping recovering addicts, and he's just a wonderful man. And, you know, he's written, I IMDb him, and you can't imagine how many hit songs this guy's written. But I remember he was pretty late for session one day, and he walked in, and he was very apologetic and said, you know, to my fellow thespians, I have to apologize. Did I miss anything? And I looked at him, and I said, well, from what I've read, Paul, the 80s. And he laughed pretty hard about that and got a big kick out of it. So we all do that kind of stuff together. And I remember that one of the really fun things I recall was we were doing Pinky and the Brain. You know, Maurice is such a great impressionist. And, of course, the Brain is really Orson Welles. And he's so good at it that he even did the voice of Orson Welles in Ed Wood.
Right.
When you see Vincent D'Onofrio on camera, he looks great, but it's Moe's voice. And so I remember, you know, Maurice, as his mic check, would always use that famous outtake of...
Yep, of, the peas.
Right. We know a remote farm where Mrs. Buckley lives, and and blah, 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 and, you know, show me a way to say in July and I'll go down on you. It's fantastic. And Mo knows it verbatim, and it's spot on, and it's every time he does it, it's hysterical. So that's what he used as his warm-up every recording session for Pinky and the Brain. So one day we went into work, and we all got there a little early. They asked if we would just please to arrive a little early this day, and three or four of us who were on the show that day did, and they passed out the script, and it was the episode that's called Yes Always, where they basically do a, you know, $400,000 in-joke in which they modify that outtake to work with Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah.
And you can find it on the DVD collection or YouTube. It's very funny. So it's Brain and doing it, and Pinky plays the part of the director who's trying to correct him. And
yeah.
So when we were going over the script, nobody said anything, and as Mo started to read it, he almost got tearful. You can see him going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, this is fantastic, you guys. Thank you, thank you. And so it turned out to be a really great episode because it was right in Mo's wheelhouse, you know. It was
yeah.
almost like it was written for Maurice, and so it was really funny and also very sweet to see how cute it was when he got the joke, and it turned out really great.
Do you have any bizarre or humorous audition stories?
Boy, I don't really. Bizarre,
Or just something that was weird compared to a regular audition, or or has it been pretty standard?
No, really. I did have an actor. I mean, I did have a director once who shall remain nameless, who came in one time on a, I forgot what show it was I was working on, but he came in one time, and apparently my character was supposed to be falling down a flight of stairs or bumping on my ass down a flight of stairs, and he wasn't getting what he wanted, and so he came in and, you know, was sort of shaking me. He said, okay, and action, and recorded it, shaking me, and, you know, put his hands on my shoulders. And then he came into another actor, Jess Harnell, I think it was, and took a broomstick and was, like, poking him to get reactions. And I remember saying to this actor, can I talk to you for a second? We took a break, and I said, look, you know, I'm all about getting what you need, but if you poke me with that fucking broomstick, you're going to wear it. And I'm not a big imposing guy, but the hockey player in me came out, and I thought, that is no way to get an act, no way to get a performance out of an actor.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, by and large, everything else is pretty cool. I mean, sometimes you get people, you know, have a bad day, but really, I can probably count the number of times that I've had bad experiences, and I put that in quotes on one hand. It's just a generally a great way to make a living.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Do you ever go back and watch the shows you worked on, like whether it's on YouTube or on DVD? Do you have any of the Pinky and the Brain or Animaniacs DVDs or Turtles DVDs?
Oh, yeah, I've got them all. I don't sit down, you know, like Star is Born and watch my, I mean, like Sunset Boulevard and watch my own performances and, you know, get depressed with a bottle of scotch. I do watch them occasionally, but I've done so many that I kind of forget, and then every now and then I'm reminded of one that somebody will send me a link on YouTube, and I go, God, what a great show, or, man, that Pat Fraley was so great in this, or, oh, yeah, I remember this show. It was really cool. And so I don't watch them religiously, but I do from time to time get on, and you know, my kid will get a Blu-ray copy of something I've done, and we'll watch it, and that's great fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
What are your feelings regarding recording with an ensemble cast versus a non-ensemble cast, where it's just you in the booth doing voices?
I would always rather be with the other actors.
Right,
always.
Yeah.
It's not always possible, and some producers prefer to do it that way, and I'm certainly fine with that, but if I have my choice, I'd always rather be with the other actors.
Mm. What is? Are there any accents you cannot do? What is the hardest accent for you to do?
Probably the hardest one for me to do right off the bat is South African accent. That's a very difficult one for me to come up with. Ordinarily, it's quite hard because it's quite easy to slip into an Australian accent, and there are very different sounds that come around with that accent, although I can pull it off if I need to. If I work on it, I can quite usually find the way to do a South African sound, but it's very hard for me. That one is hard because it you know, people who really hear it and are from that area can pick it up right away that I'm sort of slipping between Australian and South African and Scottish. So that's a hard one. And obscure ones like Finnish and Latvian, I would never know. You know, I would never know the difference. But I'm pretty good. I got a pretty good ear. If I listen to something and they give me an example, I can pick it up. And then the trick is sliding the words on the script into that accent instead of just repeating what I hear on an example. You know what I mean?
Right.
But the South African is a tough one. And, boy, Matt Damon did a really, really good job of that in Invictus. I mean, he really did. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Out of, you know, you've worked with a ton of people over the years. Is there anybody that you haven't worked with that you would really like to?
Yeah, John Cleese. I love John Cleese and Michael Palin. They were two of my heroes growing up. I really wanted to find a way to work with Peter Sellers, but of course he passed away many, many years ago. You know, there are so many. I'm a big rock and roll fan because that's kind of my roots. I would find a love in some way to work with some of my rock and roll heroes like Jeff Beck or Jimmy Page or Robert Plant or something. I never know. You know, you never really know. You might be working on a project someday, and the musical aspects are being, you know, composed by David Gilmour, and I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan. You just never know. But I did get a chance to work with Randy Newman, and I know he's doing a play called Harps and Angels here in L.A. right now with Michael McKean's in it, and I've gotten a chance to work with Mike McKean and Harry Shearer and Chris Guest. Those guys are terrific. Dave Thomas, great. These guys are all, I'm huge fans of all of theirs, and I've had a pleasure of working with them. Carrie Elwes and I got to be buddies on Pinky and the Brain, and I got to work with Roddy McDowell, big fan, just a sweet, loving, wonderful man, Ernest Borgnine, Tim Conway. So there are many people, you know, if I could think of one right now, I would have to probably go with John Cleese and Michael Palin and maybe Peter O'Toole. And I think Brad Pitt would be a gas because he's so much more than just being a pretty boy. He's a very talented guy. He's great in Megamind. I'd love to work with Brad Pitt because he also really loves cars and motorcycles like I do. So, yeah, all those guys, there are just so many gifted people out there, and the money of whom I count among my friends. But celebrities I haven't worked with yet. Nicholson, too, just to be in the presence of Jack Nicholson, I think it'd be great. Dustin Hoffman. So many big fans. I wish that I could have worked somehow with Stanley Kubrick. He was my favorite director. And But I, you know what? If I die tomorrow, I've had a pretty good run, man. I've been really lucky.
Yeah. You have been to some of the various Comic-Con fan conventions that have been held over the years. What are your impressions of the fan conventions and types of following that some of these shows receive?
Oh, I love Comic-Con. I've been going to Comic-Con. This year was the first year I didn't go, and only because I had nothing to promote. I'm sure that they'll, you know, the studio will bring me maybe to promote Turtles or whatever next year. I don't know. But I've been going for 15 years. 13 years. I took my son the first time and 1983 when we were launching Animaniacs and then went all the way up to 2009. I love it. I'm so deeply appreciative of the fan base and just love to see how it's grown and the way that folks treat me like a rock star there. I'm really, really, truly grateful. I am humbled by the response I get from places like, you know, not only that, but other conventions I've been to, most of which aren't as quite as huge as Comic-Con, which is just overwhelming to this, you know, my senses, and it's just lovely the way they treat me. And again, my admonishments earlier in this interview were not directed toward, you know, fans or geeks in general, because I am a fan and a geek.
Right.
I just don't like it when people don't give something a chance, because it's people work too hard on a project. Nobody ever starts out to make a bad show.
Right.
And so if it deserves to be punished and it deserves to, you know, go the way of the buffalo, great, turn the channel. It sucks, it won't be back, don't buy the toys.
Well, give it a chance.
You know, while something's in production, people will disparage it and say, oh, there's no fucking way this thing can be any good. I can't believe they got so-and-so to do this. Or I listened to this girl last time, she was terrible. Well, you know, give it a chance. I'm a total geek, too, but I also work on it, and I know, you know, people bleed for these shows, so to shoot it down before it hits the air is not cool. That's the only thing I got a problem with. But no, man, I'm really cool and very glad to be a part of any of that.
Yeah. I actually, Rob, I didn't tell you this before, but I actually teach at the junior high level. And one of the things I've started doing this last, actually this last year was the first year I did it, but I actually play in the first week when you're just kind of getting to know each other and kind of trying to warm up to everybody. I actually play your version of Nations of the World and your president's song. Because I teach social studies, and I actually offer anybody that can memorize the Nations of the World song extra credit. Out of all the singing that you've done in shows over the years, is there a certain song that is your favorite or the most memorable one you've performed?
Well, that probably is the one that, you know, I do it at every performance I attend. Every live performance I go to, every personal appearance I'm asked to be part of, I do that song, and people go nuts, and I love doing it. So that has to certainly, I think, be my number one favorite, and certainly the all-time performed song and the most requested song.
Mm-hmm.
On which that I've been a part of. And so I've done it hundreds of times, and I never get tired of it. The other one I like is the one that I won. I won my Emmy for doing a show, doing an episode called It was the Pinky and the Brain version of A Star Is Born, and
okay.
Where Brain plays Norman Brain instead of Norman Maine, and I'm the Judy Garland part, and it's either Judy Garland or the original one was Janet Gaynor, and so I won, and the song in the song I sing in that, I think, is one of the things that won me the Emmy, because it's a really beautiful song, and I love that song too. But I never performed that one live. Yakko's World, I can perform live without the music, and it's a transfixing, mesmerizing song. Thanks to Randy Rogel, mm-hmm. who wrote it. It doesn't need any accompaniment. If you do that song by itself, a cappella, people just go unbelievable.
Right.
You know, so it stands on its own. So that's probably got to be my favorite.
Yeah, I've never been able to do the Nations of the World past Africa. Or once I get to Africa, I get in trouble.
Yeah, it's crazy. Randy Rogel, man, he's still writing, still very prolific, writing and producing his own musicals. Another guy, just incredibly gifted man. And you could have dinner with him and just think, wow, what a cool guy. Really great.
Yeah. In your opinion, how hard would you say it is to make it in the voice acting business, and do you have any advice for people who are trying to break into voice acting?
Well, anything worth doing can require some blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, it's in terms of being hard, you know, going to have people shoot at you in Iraq is hard. That's difficult. You know,
right.
Pouring hot tar in August in Louisiana on the freeway is hard. You know, being a laborer is hard. It's hugely competitive because there are a lot of, you know, really talented actors, both celebrities and rank-and-file actors like myself, who are good at this, and this is what we do. But there's, you know, people always break in. Nobody does it forever. There's always room. There are new people that I've gotten to work with in the last few years. Uri Lowenthal is fantastic on Ben 10 and the other stuff he does. Years ago, you know, Jason Marsden was a new kid. He's fantastic.
Yeah,
I was a new kid. Danny Cooksey used to be a new kid. There are so many new guys. Eric Bauza is a new kid, is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So many young guys that are and girls that are fantastic. I mentioned, now I can't think of her name, but I mentioned her earlier. I worked with her on back at the Barnyard.
Tara Strong.
Her name, but. No, Tara Strong, I mean, she's young and beautiful, but she's been around forever. I was thinking of,
Andy?
God, what the hell is it?
Andy McAfee?
Nancy Cartwright?
Oh,
no, not Andy. Andy and Nancy, those guys have been around forever. I'm thinking of, I'll think of it. she worked around the back of the Barnyard, and, you know, folks like this, brand new, and so there's plenty of room. I would tell people if it's your passion and you cannot imagine yourself not doing it, then you have to do it. Try to work on your chops, acting, singing, improvising, dialects, all that stuff before you come to L.A. And do yourself a little favor and go to, you know, find out who these actors are represented by and give the names of agents in Hollywood. And virtually all of them have websites to which you can go and listen to the demos of your favorite actors. So you can hear my demo. You can hear Billy West's demo. You can hear Jeff Bennett's. You can hear Corey Burton's. Mm-hmm. You can hear Welker's. And then you know what you're up against. Not to discourage you, but you got to know what you're up against. It's a huge pool. Now it's also, you know, the celebrities are in the mix. So you're competing with people who are really gifted with their voice and naturally talented and have thousands of hours of experience. But then you're also up against people who have high visibility on television. And, you know, it's a tough nut.
Right.
But, you know, it's not hard if it's an adventure. It's challenging and very rewarding, and I would never dissuade you from doing it, but just know what you're in for before you get in so it doesn't, you know, blow your brains out, because it can be a little overwhelming. But for me, it was a big challenge, and I stuck it out, and I got a crack at it. And luckily, I made the most of it, and I had a lot of good breaks and a lot of good people that were helping me along, and I try to reciprocate now. Sometimes I also have friends that it hasn't worked out for them. They're really talented, but they didn't get the breaks, or when they got them, they didn't capitalize the same way that a number of us other ones did. It's no reflection on their talent. It's just that's showbiz, to coin a phrase,
right.
And sometimes it's pretty cruel. But, you know, starting your own business is cruel. The economy is tough right now. You know, it's hard to become a professional athlete. It's not too dissimilar from being a professional actor. The odds are really, 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 really against you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've worked out and you're good at your game and the scouts like what they hear and the producers like what they hear, they'll give you a shot.
Right.
Whether or not you can make it through the drills and whether or not you can make it through you almost made it. You didn't get this one, but you had 5 callbacks, but they decided to go with a celebrity. Well, you get pissed off and you get over it, and then you're on to the next one. If you can do that, then this is for you. If not, then for some people, it's great, and they just do the art for its own sake, and they love being in productions at home or at their colleges or doing local radio and local stuff, and that is every bit as legitimate in terms of being satisfying for your soul. And sometimes I get notes from people saying, you know, I was out there for 5 years, but now I'm so happy because I'm involved in my local theater company, or I'm doing online cartoons with my friends up here in Vermont, and we are having the time of our lives. And that's great.
Right.
It's really all about satisfying yourself. It's, you know, it definitely takes on a different complexion when you're doing it to put braces on your kid's teeth. It's not then, I mean, as much fun as it is, and as a huge, wonderful ride as it's been, it's a totally different vibe when you know you got to make the mortgage payment.
Right.
Yeah.
We just have a couple of more questions for you, and then we'll be done.
Okay.
One of them, I got to ask this because it's my complete geek question here, because I'm mildly obsessed with the old 80s show MacGyver, which you appeared on an episode in 1986. I know it was a long time ago. Do you remember anything about your experience on that show or working with Richard Dean Anderson or anything?
Yeah, Richard Dean Anderson and I went to become buddies because I'm a hockey player and he is too, and we played on the same hockey team for years. And I saw Richard the other day. He lives in Malibu, and he's another motorcycle guy, and I saw him about a year and a half ago. Last time I saw him was at the BMW dealership out here in Newberry Park in the mountains in Southern California. And we had a nice chat. He's doing well. He looks great. He's always been a real handsome guy, and he's just a lovely, lovely guy. Good hockey player, great motorcyclist, and a good actor, very good actor. He obviously had a terrific career with, you know,
Stargate and MacGyver.
Stargate and MacGyver. I mean, the guy's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think he was on a soap opera before MacGyver. So
yeah,
he's been around.
Yeah.
But one thing I remember about that episode that was so wonderful was that I got to meet and work for 2 days or 3 days with Russell Johnson, who was the professor on Gilligan's Island. And he worked with me on that show, and that was a huge, huge, huge thrill for me to be able to sit and have lunch and do like you guys are with me today. I asked him all sorts of questions, and he never got tired of it. And it was really cool to be able to sit and have lunch with the professor. He told me all these great stories about Jim Backus and Bob Denver and Tina Louise, and it was great. Really, that was a huge thrill for me.
Nice. I've noticed that you're quite the active and, I'll say, hilarious Twitter poster. Do you enjoy using Twitter and Facebook as much as you seem to, and where do you come up with some of your topics?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know where I come up with them. They just sort of enter in my head, and fortunately, I don't need any chemical inducement to get them out, but I'm sometimes inspired by fans because a lot of them are even wackier than I. But yeah, I'm not a Twitter or Facebook nut. I mean, I'm not on it all the time. Like, I have friends, Hal Sparks, my God, he's got a Twitter 20, 30, 40 times a day. I don't even know if I've probably retweeted 3 or 4 today, but nothing like that.
Yeah.
One of the golf heroes I follow, a guy named Ian Poulter, a British golfer. You know, he's got like a million followers. And same with Chris Hardwick, who's just a brilliantly gifted comedian who played Otis the cow on Back at the Barnyard. Maria Bamford, by the way, was the name of the young lady I was
thinking
of. Stand-up comic. You got to check her out online. She's ridiculously gifted. Maria Bamford is another one. Chris Hardwick has over, I think, 1 million or 2 million followers and tweets every day. He hosts a show on G4 about, electronics and gizmos and gadgets. Incredibly funny. But, I find all of it really fascinating, and I love being able to keep in touch. Sometimes I can't always respond as quickly or as often as people would like, and I hope they understand. It's not because I don't want to, but I really do, you know, type like a mental patient, and sometimes it's really hard for me to keep up. If I'm on and like 20 people or 50 or 100 people want to talk to me at the same time, I can't do it.
Right. Well, I was very entertained by your movie titles with food names.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I saw that topic. I just tried to join the fun, so thank you for that.
All right. Well, we would like to thank Mr. Rob Paulson for taking the time to chat with us in this special GeekCast Radio Network interview. This will also be featured on This Week in Geek. It's another one of it's a sister site to us. They kind of do the same geeky things. They've interviewed a whole bunch of people as well. Rob,
excellent.
Yes. If people wanted to get in touch with you, say through Facebook or Twitter, do you want us to give that information out to people or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, I mean, on Facebook it's just Rob Paulson, and on Twitter it's Yakko Pinky.
Okay.
They can do it, and as long as they understand that, you know, quite often I respond to people as when I friend them, but I don't have millions of followers like that. I've only got like 1,600 or 1,700 Twitter followers, and maybe the same amount on Facebook, and I try to respond to things when I can, but it's more about if I'm going to be performing somewhere or let people know that I've got something online for them to look at, I let them know, and I try to respond when I can. But just please know that I really do appreciate everybody who's paid attention to my stuff throughout the years, and I hope that I can continue to live up to your expectations and keep you laughing and, more importantly, smiling for years to come.
Yes, and we're going to ask you to hold the line as we go to a break where you're probably going to hear the Planet song, maybe, so we'll be right back.
Hey, guys, Raphael here of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you say podcast? Dudes, dudettes, you're listening to the podcast on the GeekCast Radio Network. Cowabunga!
It's time to tour the planets that make up our solar system. Come on! The closest to the sun is the planet Mercury. Next, the shrouded planet Venus is as cloudy as can be. The Earth is next, we call it home, let's hope it stays that way. And then there's Mars, it's really red, what more can I say? The gassy planet Jupiter's as big as planets come. Then there's Saturn with its mighty rings made up of tiny crumbs. We travel on to Neptune, that's a gassy, freezing ball. And cold and tiny Pluto, it's the furthest one of all. Well, there you go, that's our solar system.
You forgot Uranus.
Good night, everybody.
Hey, Dad! Pinky here, of Pinky and the Brain, the smarter one, if you don't mind saying so. I love listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Marv!
Oh my god. Oh god, that was so much fun.
Yeah, it's basically proved, so far, every time we have interviewed a voice actor, it has been an amazing experience, and I'm convinced that all voice actors are genuinely good human beings now. Because every time we talk to anybody, they are so gracious, they're so kind about things, they're so accommodating, and, you know, that was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's funny. I normally, because everybody knows that GCRN and Twig, for the most part, because I'm also going to have Mike Dodd feature this over on at This Week in Geek as well, but most of our network stuff is explicit, and we didn't tell Rob ahead of time that, yeah, it's okay if you need to curse. He just started cursing. I was like, wow, cool.
That was very cool.
And I know it's weird for us to kind of geek out over a celebrity cursing, but I mean, it's like, you know, you just don't expect it, but wow. But yeah, that was really, really great to talk to Rob. Very, very awesome guy.
Yeah. You know, and it's something where, you know, I've been around, I haven't been around a lot of celebrities in my life, obviously, but, you know, I've gone to certain events or, you know, seen like sports people or, you know, like UFC fighters or whatnot. And for some reason, it doesn't have the same effect on me as when, like, on Behind the Voice Actors, when a actual voice actor leaves a comment about something or talking to some of these voice actors in an interview. It's just a completely different experience. And I get a little more geeked out when I'm talking to voice actors. It's just so cool.
That's, you know, and I've said this before, that's one of the reasons why we do these intros, outros before the actual interview and just don't give you the interview right away, because that way for us, we don't geek out on them and scare them off.
Yeah, they don't need to hear that part until they listen to the whole episode later.
Yes, exactly. But no, it was just a really great pleasure to talk
and
to Rob.
And he gave us a little sampling of his Donatello voice.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It was a very, very little bit of sampling. And, you know, like he was saying in the interview, you know, give something a chance. You know, just because he is known as Raphael for the most part, maybe he can bring something different to Donatello. And he said that's what they were looking for was, yes, we knew you were Raphael. And, yes, we want you for Donatello because we want Donnie to go in a slightly different direction. And
so give it a chance.
Yeah, give it a chance. And I'm actually really excited for Turtles now.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, it's just like some of the other people we've talked about. You know, obviously there's always new Transformers cartoons and, you know, people go nuts about, oh, you know, so-and-so's not doing the voice or so-and-so is doing the voice. And the moral of the story is watch the show, you know, the first couple episodes. And then if you don't want to watch it, you don't have to watch it. You might like it and you might find something new that you want to watch. So don't judge it until you see it.
Exactly.
Or hear it.
Yeah. Yes. So I guess that's going to wrap it up for us. I have been Mike TFG and Blanchard, and you are?
Kevin Optimus Solo Thompson.
And for This Week in Geek and Geekcast Radio Network, we would just like to say thank you to Rob Paulson, and good luck with everything that he will be doing in the future, and we will see you guys next time.
Adios.
Oh, no. These producers is driving me crazy here at the Geekcast Radio Network. Oh, what am I to do?
Good night, everybody.